This weekend starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Choking on the campaign trail. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour. Smart campaign strategies can be turned upside down when a political candidate makes a food mistake while stumping. Here are examples. Also, with grocery store prices having skyrocketed, there's a case for dining out this Thanksgiving. We'll explain the math. At the races, the artist who live paints the NASCAR champion within minutes of the checkered flag at Phoenix, and what to keep in mind ahead of Thanksgiving travel.
The most popular days to travel before Thanksgiving are the Tuesday and Wednesday. That's when, you know, everyone's flying out, and it makes sense. School calendars and things make it so a lot of families can fly out earlier. But if you can, you're going to save a lot more money by flying before those 2 days.
Jacob Passy at the Wall Street Journal on a strategy for cheaper flights over the holidays. Well, from state fairs to pizzerias, candidates have a history of choking on the campaign trail. Not necessarily literally, but with food oopsies that voters find hilariously wrong or offensive. Examples from Christina Peterson, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Christina, set this up.
There's a long history of candidates making food and drink-related missteps on the campaign trail, and it's something that voters just kind of instinctively notice. They know when someone has done something that just doesn't feel right to them, and food is just one of those ways in which we identify our candidates as sort of feeling authentic. And we just kind of felt that the issue had more resonance this year in particular because inflation is such a huge issue that people are dealing with in their lives. The cost of groceries has gone up 13% over the last 12 months, and this is something that politicians are talking about a lot, and it's just on atop people's minds.
Yeah.
So we've seen a lot of politicians doing ads in the supermarket, talking about food prices, eating food on the trail, and, you know, it can be a way for them to connect with voters, but if they get it wrong, it is seen as a mistake.
All right, so you cite a lot of examples in your piece. You open up with Joe O'Day, Republican Senate candidate in Colorado. What happened?
So he had kind of a two-level misstep. One is that he drank his beer on ice, which is seen as watering down beer. And then second, he drank a Michelob Ultra in a state home to many breweries and craft beers. So I think most people just kind of rolled their eyes at this. It's not, you know, a grievous error, but it was seen as kind of a funny gaffe in Colorado. And he, to his credit, he just owns it. He says he's been drinking beer on ice for decades. He went to visit a friend in Arizona who suggested that he do this to keep his beer cold, and now that's the way he drinks his beer. But his campaign did clarify that he doesn't always drink Michelob Ultra. He's more of a Coors guy, they told me.
Of course he is. Yeah, of course he is. how about the old pizza with a fork? We all remember that. There were a couple instances of that, right?
Oh, yeah, Forkgate. I mean, this is something that has tripped up both Democrats and Republicans alike. Former Mayor Bill de Blasio, former Ohio Republican John Kasich were both busted trying to eat pizza with a fork, or, you know, successfully eating pizza with a fork. Kasich later told Seth Meyers that he just made a terrible mistake and basically confessed that the pizza was so hot he had no choice. Bill de Blasio said that he is Italian-American and this is how they do it in Italy. So that was his defense.
Mm. We're speaking with Christina, right? We're speaking with Christina Peterson, food and ag policy reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Political Candidates Choke on Food and Drink Issues, and she's talking about some of the gaffes on the campaign trail. How about that the Ohio Senate race you referenced?
Oh, yes. This is kind of funny. So this race between Congressman Tim Ryan and J.D. Vance, who is the author of Hillbilly Elegy, you know, a lot of it has been about who's sort of more right for Ohio. And so Congressman Ryan accused Mr. Vance in a debate of having spent time in Colorado. He said, you were drinking wine and eating cheese. And this was like, you know, a big attack line in the debate. And Mr. Vance's campaign noted that the Congressman Ryan had put out a campaign ad in which he and his wife drink a bottle of wine. So, you know, this sort of goes both ways. I'm not sure that that's going to really hold as the most cutting attack line. Right. But it was sort of an interesting moment. And it gets to this question of sort of authenticity. If you're drinking wine and eating cheese in California, can you really represent Ohio in the Senate? That's sort of the accusation there.
Right. I often question, does this come down to advance work by some of the staffers here for the politicians? Because you referenced John Kerry in Philadelphia, right, gets a Philly cheesesteak, but with Swiss cheese.
Right, which is not an acceptable cheese choice to Philadelphians. It's either American provolone or melted cheese whiz. And his staff did fall on the sword and say it was their fault. They didn't brief him properly. But they did note to me that Kerry did win Pennsylvania. So perhaps that was not the reason he did not land in the White House after all.
Thanks, Christina. Christina Peterson, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, why men don't go to the doctor. Why wait to save? Dell Technologies' Black Friday event arrives early with select deals on top tech to power business productivity. The savings start now with up to 48% off performance business PCs powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors. Don't forget special pricing on the latest monitors, docks, and accessories, including free shipping on everything. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL for Black Friday deals. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us, first full weekend of November. By at least one measure, men are 24% less likely than women to have visited a doctor within the past year. Why won't men go to the doctor? Insight from Dr. Brad Leibovich, urologic oncologist at Mayo Clinic. Doctor, what's the reason?
You know, we're just different animals. Women are much better at doing regular health maintenance than men are. I think in general, men tend to neglect things that are bothering them. They like to see themselves as tough and will work through it and don't recognize that, you know, most things we can make better.
How much of it, too, might be ego? I was thinking about this as I was looking at some of your notes here. What if we're overweight and we just don't want to hear a doctor tell us to get on the treadmill and drop some pounds?
I think there's ego. I think for a lot of what I see, there's denial. We don't like to think about things that might want to hurt us. We like to think that we're invincible. You know, things like dropping weight, body image are things that we're just not as comfortable speaking about.
And how come? Is there some sort of stigma attached to that? Like, you know, the youth sports, right? Get up, walk it off, rub some dirt on it, that stuff?
Absolutely. Walk it off, be tough, pull yourself up by the bootlaces, whatever verbiage you want to use. That's what we're taught from a young age.
All right. So if we don't want to talk about it, how do we raise that as an issue in our families, let's say, if we are trying to encourage a man in our lives to go more to the doctor?
Yeah, so I think, you know, from a urologist perspective, we have a good advantage, right? We have some things that bother men and bother our loved ones. So, for example, things like erectile dysfunction or infertility will get people in the door of the urologist's office. And then it's our responsibility as physicians caring for the whole patient to then open the door for other issues that men need to address. Things like cancer screening, things like cardiac health and other issues.
Mm. All right. So selfishly, I ignored going to the doctor for, I don't know, 30 years. I went when I turned 50 to 5 years ago. I took too long again, but at least did a follow up this year. Like I had blood work done. Yep, my cholesterol's high. But what else does that tell me? Is that a cancer screening, for example? I didn't even think to ask.
No, and I don't know how old you are, but again, from a urologist perspective, you know, starting in your mid-50s, we would recommend that you have a conversation with your physician about prostate cancer screening. So prostate cancer screening has been shown to diminish mortality, to prevent deaths from prostate cancer, and perhaps even more important, might allow a man to, when diagnosed with prostate cancer, have much less intensive therapy with less impact on quality of life. So I think it's important for men to broach these issues with their own physicians. You know, often, you know, primary care docs are very busy and bringing up things like, you know, what else should I be doing is you know, the responsibility of every patient to bring up with their physicians.
Mm. We're speaking with Dr. Brad Leibovich. He's a urologic oncologist at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. We're talking about why men go to the doctor less than women. It is National Men's Health Awareness Month. You said, too, in some notes here that men tend to engage in riskier activities that threaten their health. Like what?
Well, you mentioned it yourself, you know, overweight. We tend to do things in greater numbers than women, like ride motorcycles. So there are more men riding motorcycles. Men are more likely to not wear a helmet riding a motorcycle if it's allowed in your state. You know, it's everything from our pastimes to our daily habits. You know, the data doesn't look good for us in terms of making smart decisions for overall health.
Yeah. Are we any better at this, doctor, than we've been over the years in terms of, let's just say, basic awareness about getting to the doctor?
I don't think that men as patients are more aware about the potential benefits of regular health maintenance and health interventions. I would like to say there's evidence that men are improving. I think that physicians are much better now at understanding the benefits, the lack of benefits, and even the potential risks around routine screening for things like cancer, cardiac disease, and other issues. So I think that physicians are much better at understanding how we can intervene and how we can have a conversation with men about the potential benefits as well as potential harms of some of these screenings.
Thanks, doctor. Dr. Brad Leibovich at Mayo Clinic. Coming up next, how to score cheaper holiday flights.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for joining us. There's a trick to saving money and avoiding airport crowds around the holidays. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Trying to save money over the holidays? You might have to spend a little more time at the in-laws. With more tips on saving on expenses this year is Jacob Passy, travel reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Jacob, how do you escape the very highest airfares?
You need to plan to pad on a few more days to your trip. It's going to be expensive to fly this year for the holidays. Demand is still really high. Post-pandemic, folks are still looking to finally get together with family. So, yeah, you're gonna have to, you know, aim to spend a little bit more time on your travels than you might have in the past to save money.
What are some examples of how you can do this?
Yeah, so around Thanksgiving, for instance, the most popular days to travel before Thanksgiving are the Tuesday and Wednesday. That's when, you know, everyone's flying out, and it makes sense. School calendars and things make it so a lot of families can't fly out earlier. But if you can, you're going to save a lot more money by flying before those 2 days. Even the Monday before Thanksgiving will be significantly cheaper than the Tuesday and Wednesday. Even better, consider flying out the Thursday or Friday the week before Thanksgiving, and that will save you even more money, perhaps. One thing to be mindful of, though, is weekends are going to be more expensive. So, you know, flying out the weekend before Thanksgiving isn't foolproof. You know, that could end up being more expensive for you than flying out the Wednesday before, because the weekends are popular travel days in general, and it's always been the case, and it still is. So it's not foolproof. It's not like any day before the holiday is going to work in your favor, but generally speaking, earlier is better.
All right, Jacob, what about the Christmas, New Year's time?
Yeah, so similar there. This year, Christmas falls on a Sunday, so that kind of throws things for a loop. But, you know, I spoke with folks who, you know, the way they were saving was they were actually flying on Christmas Day. So, you know, they weren't going to get to spend the full holiday with their families, but they save that way, and then they're staying through New Year's. So again, the longer you stay, you know, you kind of avoid those peak days right after a holiday. But again, you know, avoiding the weekend travel around Christmas will be important, and then flying, you know, a week in advance will probably save you money. If you can stay through after New Year's, you know, flying back on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day tends to be kind of popular because it's, again, a holiday, so people have that day off. So flying, you know, on the 2nd, 3rd onward will save you money as well.
We're speaking with Jacob Passy, travel reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Jacob, how are hybrid work schedules changing how we might fly?
So one thing that we've seen is not only are these days cheaper to fly when you're flying well in advance of a holiday, but they're becoming more popular. And a lot of that is because people can work from home much more easily today than they could pre-pandemic. Even if you've gone back into the office, chances are, your boss might allow you to work remotely for a few days around the holidays, especially when it's a quieter period. So as a result, a lot of folks are making the choice to fly earlier to save money, and then they're working from their in-laws' house or whatever it may be. You know, I spoke with one couple where, you know, the in-laws were preparing to buy more comfortable beds and upgrade the Wi-Fi because their children were coming for the holidays and staying a little bit longer and working remotely. So it's definitely made it a lot more feasible for a lot of people to travel earlier and really reap the benefit of those savings rather than the typical pre-pandemic trend of, you know, flying right as close to the holiday as possible so you don't have to take too many days off of work.
Do we know if airlines are any better prepared to handle crowds than they were this summer?
I think that's the million-dollar question, and, you know, it remains to be seen what the weather is going to be like and, you know, whether there's going to be any major issues at one hub or another. Those sorts of things are hard for them to avoid. You know, if there's bad weather in one part of the country, that could have a ripple effect. But I do think that they have been, you know, continuing to staff up and improve things. We've also seen them add more capacity, especially around the weekends and before holidays and after holidays, both they're responding to greater demand, but they're also, you know, I think preparing themselves for, you know, a pretty high number of people traveling. It's going to be close to pre-pandemic levels, if not, you know, exceeding it perhaps. So, I think that they are better prepared, and I think that, you know, they learned a lot of lessons from this summer, but, only time will tell whether that extra planning will pay off with fewer canceled flights.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal travel reporter Jacob Passy. 30 minutes now after the hour on this weekend. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. I'm Gordon Deal. Coming up this half hour, redefining what work is. Also, better plans for budgeting your time. Plus, is this the year to dine out for Thanksgiving? And the artist who live paints NASCAR's champion in Phoenix. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Employees at General Motors balked at a request
to return to the office. At Meta Platforms, the parent of Facebook, bosses are asking workers to get more done with fewer resources. Some CEOs say things are so tense that handing out modest raises can spark a backlash in an era of rising inflation. The Wall Street Journal says the workplace is in the middle of an unusual collision between what bosses and workers want. Here's Julie Bauke, career strategist known as Julie on the Job. Julie, your take.
There's a gap between how productive people think they're being and how productive their organization thinks they're being in a lot of cases. And to me, the biggest reason for that gap is that most organizations can't even tell you what productivity looks like for their organization. Mm. What it devolved to over time was, if I can see you and you look busy, you must be productive. Or back in the early 80s, 90s, when we're all in offices, if you come in early and stay late, darn it, you are productive. And these generations are rejecting that as the definition of productivity. But they want to know, what does it look like to be productive? Are there measures? Are there, you know, in other words, what am I moving toward? And that is such a lack in organizations. So, and then on top, from a productivity standpoint, from a resource standpoint, organizations, so if you have a department of four and your boss hasn't been able to fill two of the positions, you are doing a lot more than you were asked to do. And so it's like this, you know, it's like this conundrum, because, you know, we're trying to find people to do the work. Or if we see a recession's coming, we're not trying to fill those two positions anymore. So what happens is it falls on you to do more. And people are saying, yeah, no, you know, I'm not going to do two people's job for one person's salary. Back in the day, we used to do it, you know?
Does this all stem from this struggle to now create a new definition for work? Does this all stem from people's demand to, say, work from home more or have some work-life balance?
Yeah, I mean, it does. And that's the second leg of the stool, is how we work. So some people, Gordon, have moved. You know, their job was in San Francisco. They moved to Omaha. And their company says, you got 30 days to get back. And they're saying, okay, I'm not coming back. So then they go and find another job. And so again, it gets to, what is your priority? Companies are saying, you know, gee, can we compromise? And will you come in 2 days a week or 3 days a week? And people are saying, maybe I'll come in 2 days a week. I think it's Apple that says you have to be in every Tuesday and Thursday. So companies are issuing ultimatums. And that's dangerous, because some people are going to say, see ya. And other people, you know, will comply. But in a time when we're trying to do more with less and there's still a talent shortage, that's very risky to issue an ultimatum. So you've got to be willing to live with the outcome of your ultimatum.
We're speaking with Julie Bauke, career strategist known as Julie on the Job, and we're talking about trying to define what work looks like these days, since bosses and workers seem to want different things. Will there be some sort of better or improved definition of what work looks like?
Yes, it's going to have to settle out at some point. I believe that the gap between what we think work is, between the oldest generation in the workforce and the youngest generation in the workforce, is the biggest gap that has ever been and probably will ever be. So you've got boomers who are still in the workforce with a very, very specific definition of what work looks like. And we have the oldest 3 years of Gen Z in the workforce right now. They're 22 to 25. And the gap there is just, it's like we're speaking two different languages.
Thanks, Julie. Julie Bauke, career strategist known as Julie on the Job. Coming up next, maximizing your time.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. We all know time is the ultimate limited resource, but we sure don't act that way sometimes. Many folks closely track how their dollars are spent and invested, but how about our use of time? Jonathan Clements at humbledollar.com came up with ways we can conceptualize our use of time. Jonathan, examples.
First one I tackle is the distinction between time commitments that are fixed and time over which is discretionary to us. So for instance, if you have a job, you know, that's a fixed time commitment every week. And, you know, you better hope that you love your job because you're going to have to go there and put in those hours. By contrast, discretionary time is the time that we love because it's when we get to choose what we do. And if you're smart, you're going to choose to spend that time doing what you love.
Yeah. I mean, you've referenced this before, and that's doing things like, if you can afford it, have somebody else cut your lawn. Put that time back in your pocket.
Exactly. I mean, one of the things that, you know, research has shown is that paying other people to do chores that you dislike is a great use of money. So if you enjoy mowing the lawn, great. Don't pay somebody. But if you don't enjoy it, hey, go ahead. Pay that somebody to do that time and then take that block of time and do it to do something you really enjoy. It's a great investment.
I know you're a big believer in indoors versus outdoors too.
Yeah, I think that getting outdoors every day is an important boost to happiness. I mean, we know from the research that being in nature is good for happiness. We know that exposure to sunlight helps our physical health. So yeah, you know, every day I try to get out and go for a bicycle ride. Every day I try to go out late in the afternoon and take a walk. And I would encourage other people to do it. It's a great way to feel better about yourself.
Agreed. We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece called Budgeting Time. One of the other things you touched on, too, here is investing versus personal finance. Explain the difference.
So when we look at our financial lives, we tend to focus on this one area, our portfolio, you know, what the stock market is doing today, you know, how our investments are faring year to date. You know, people check their account balance every day. They check in on the stock market every couple of hours. But the fact is, once you have a basic asset allocation and diversification strategy, you've got that group of mutual funds that you own, you know, you're not going to get much better by fiddling around with it. By contrast, if you focus less on investing and more on personal finance, things like making sure you have a good estate plan, making sure you have the right insurance, holding down your borrowing costs, making sure you're spending in a thoughtful way, thinking about when you're going to claim Social Security, those are all areas where a little bit of time can yield big rewards, yeah, far more than you're going to get by focusing on your portfolio's performance day to day.
Item number six that you referenced, you used a word I had to look up, which was eudaimonic. But what do you mean by hedonic versus eudaimonic happiness?
So there are two different types of happiness. There's hedonic happiness, which, you know, you can think of as, you know, going to a really great dinner party and just, you know, having a blast, having a few drinks, seeing your friends, and, you know, hedonic happiness should be part of every day. But then there's this other type of happiness, which is eudaimonic happiness. And that would be the happiness you get from preparing for a dinner party, from spending a bunch of hours in the kitchen, you know, cooking a meal that you know your friends and family are really going to enjoy. It's not a happy-go-lucky time like it is when you're actually at the party, but it is a happy time in that you have the satisfaction of doing something that's somewhat difficult and that will, you know, give you, you know, a sense of satisfaction and hopefully make your friends and family happier.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor at HumbleDollar.com. Coming up next, the case for dining out at Thanksgiving. Why wait to save? Dell Technologies' Black Friday event arrives early with select deals on top tech to power business productivity. The savings start now with up to 48% off performance business PCs powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors. Don't forget special pricing on the latest monitors, docks, and accessories, including free shipping on everything. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL for Black Friday deals. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us, first full weekend of November. Looking for an excuse to dine out this Thanksgiving? Well, you are in luck. A new report from Wells Fargo found grocery prices are rising at a much faster rate than the price of food away from home. Here to explain is Bailey Schultz, consumer news reporter at USA Today. Bailey, give us takeaways.
What the main finding was is that prices at the grocery store are rising at a much faster clip than prices out of the home. So if you're going, if you're debating what to do for Thanksgiving this year and are kind of on the edge or considering eating out, it's actually a pretty good deal compared to years past.
Wow. I don't think I've ever kind of heard the phrase that was mentioned in your story, eating out has some value. But it's true this year, I guess. What's the difference? Like, you know, how much are prices up, say, at the grocery store versus at restaurants, if there's such a way to measure?
Yeah. So like I said, this looked at the consumer price index data. And so what Wells Fargo found was that food at home has gone up about 9.81% since November of 2021. And that's compared to just 5.79% for food away from home.
It's got to be unusual.
Oh, yeah. No, the economist from Wells Fargo I spoke to, I asked if this is something he's ever seen. And he's been doing this work, I think he said, a couple decades. And he was saying he's never seen anything like this. And this is sort of a one-off where not sure if this will be the same value kind of when you compare the two next year. So this is really an outlier of a year for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Does it matter the type of restaurant you might go to if you intend to dine out on Thanksgiving, whether it's fast food or a chain or some higher end steakhouse or something?
It definitely does. Those numbers I mentioned earlier are looking at food away from home in general, but there are certain types of restaurants that have are a better deal than others. Where this report found limited service restaurants, so those ones where you pay before you eat, they have a smaller year over year consumer price index change compared to those sort of full service meals and snacks that you find away from home. So yes, some restaurants will be a better value than others, of course, but overall, this is really an interesting year as far as just the value you get from eating away from home for Thanksgiving.
Wow. We're speaking with Bailey Schultz, consumer news reporter at USA Today. Her story is called Grocery Store Prices Are Up. Is this the year to dine out for Thanksgiving? How do you save on Thanksgiving anyway? You pointed out some things in your story.
Yeah, I know for a lot of people, having that sort of traditional meal at home is still really important. So I don't think everyone's going to rush out and eat at restaurants this year. But if you are eating at home and you're looking for ways to save money, there were a couple of tips from this report where, yes, we are going to see prices go up just because of inflation. Grocery store prices are already up in general. And so turkey prices are going to be up. Expect potato prices to go up. But the main takeaway that this expert had was just be flexible in what you buy. If you're seeing potato prices are up, maybe try opting for sweet potatoes, which might not have been as affected by some of the there's this cool spring in Idaho that is the delayed potato and onion crop, so sweet potatoes might be another option for that. Or if you're seeing cranberry prices are up, try doing the canned version, even if it may not be as good. It will save you some money.
Thanks, Bailey. Bailey Schultz, consumer news reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, the man who live paints the NASCAR champ in Phoenix. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save. We'll finish with this. As NASCAR's top drivers roar toward the finish line with the checkered flag in sight, Bill Patterson is in victory lane hard at work. You may not recognize his name or face, but he's a staple for NASCAR races in Phoenix, leaving in victory lane a rainbow of paint splotches that didn't quite make it from his brush to his canvas, depicting the latest winning driver and car. With team members, sponsors, reporters, and fans flooding the area waiting for the winner to pull his car center stage, the 69-year-old Mr. Patterson is frantically painting a vibrant masterpiece, celebrating the win all in a matter of minutes after Phoenix's two Cup Series events each season, including Sunday's championship race. A live painter. Most of his work is created on the spot and in about an hour. He told For the Win at USA Today, quote, "I don't have time to screw it up." Chase Elliott, the 2020 champ, marvels at the work. He says, "It's amazing that somebody can freehand that quickly. I can hardly write my own name." That'll do it for this hour. I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.